Champions, today we have a very inspirational guest. When his father was diagnosed with cancer, he knew he had a very limited time to achieve the Grandmaster title and make his father proud. During those years, however, he was also the CFO of a major startup in Singapore, making it incredibly difficult to find time for chess. But he didn't give up. He pushed himself and earned his Grandmaster title at age of 36. Then he gave up his position in his company and became the CEO of the Singapore Chess Federation with a mission to make Singapore a chess country. And when I hear that the upcoming World Championship match between Gukesh and Ding is going to be held in Singapore, I was blown away by how this guy never stops surprising me, how big he thinks and achieve he is no matter what. Please meet Grandmaster Kevin Goh. Kevin, thank you very much for coming to Chessput Podcast. Good to see you.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's great to see you. We actually have never met in person, yeah?
Yeah. I was thinking today. Yeah. So hopefully during the Olympiad we will make it.
Yeah, finally.
I think I know you already. How many years? It's 4 or 5 years when we started to work together.
2019.
5 years we have seen only through cameras, so it's shame on us.
Yeah.
Let's fix it quickly. bro, look, I'm quite the type that it's like think big, go big, excuseless. So like find ways, yeah, and it's difficult to surprise me. But when I saw that the world championship between Gukesh and Ding Liren is going to be in Singapore, it was like Kevin always surprises me. So wait, like you said earlier that in Singapore chess is not that developed. It's developing, yeah, we can say that it that way, true. And you have just a few grandmasters, and when I asked you last time, I shared that maybe one day I will represent another country, so I play in the team championship. You said like pro Singapore, no, maybe later, maybe in the future. And now you somehow managed to take the world championship to Singapore. Please tell me, how did you make this?
No, I mean, of course, you understand I'm not the only person behind the whole thing, but definitely the idea came to me very, very early.
Did it came right after the candidate, or you thought earlier?
No. It was really at the point when Gukesh won the match, won the candidates, and then I just thought about it. But I wasn't sure. Of course, I wasn't sure. I have some doubts because I know that you need so many parties to support it. It's a lot easier if somebody comes down and says, Kevin, can you just organize this and we will back it all the way? That's different, right? But chess, or rather a lot of things in Singapore don't really work like that. Like things don't fall from the sky. You have to earn it. You have to ask for it, right? So I thought about it. I have some doubts. And then like a few days later, you know, people started calling me and say, Kevin, do you think about this? What do you think? This is a good idea. Do you think you want to push for it? And I understood that there are a lot of guys out there who might be very keen to see this happen. But at the same time, I also know that I will be the one to try to, you know, do like massive coordination work and to also get buy-in from government bodies. We have to get buy-in from private companies. I have to seek support from my own board, right? It's the Singapore Chess Federation, because they must be supportive as well. They don't want to be seen to be doing crazy stuff with like low chances of success. So that was actually the first few considerations I had. And then I, you know, we discussed this together as a team. I just felt like, okay, we have these various steps to do. And before we do all these things, by the deadline, 31st of May, okay, then we can decide if we can do it. But I think I still remember the dates. I think it's 27th of April, FIDE released the official call for the bid. And that was when I started circulating this to different people and to say like, okay, if we want to submit a bid in 1 month, what do we need to do? Right? Is it even realistic? Is it possible? So that's when the deep planning started. starts to take place. Like, we have many phone calls, and essentially it was about me trying to solicit support from different parties and different people. So that was really how it started.
How did you persuade your country that being not a chess country, it's a good idea to have here a match? And I believe that you also need to put lots of organization, you need to put finances, etc. Like, how did you make this? How did you make them that they were like, yes, Kevin, let's do that, let's do chess world championship in Singapore?
I think that there have to be a few angles behind hosting a match of this magnitude. First of all, you have to understand what are the interests from the other party's perspective. But for sure, the country, my government sees this as a great opportunity to promote chess in the country, but that cannot be the only thing, because if that's the only thing, we can do so many other different types of events, right? But there are so many like good plus that we can do from the match. For example, the tourism angle. So we have, first of all, an estimated, I think, 1.2 to 1.5 million Indian tourists that will visit Singapore in the whole of this year. So if you break it down by December, there could be 100,000, 200,000 Indians who might fly just to visit us.
Wow.
Yeah. So that it in itself could already be like a good indicator of how popular the match could be.
Do you expect more visitors from China or from India?
I would say at this point, mainly Indians at
Why?
This point, because we see a growth in travelers from India, like gradually. China citizens have always visited Singapore, but we have been seeing like this gradual increase from Indian citizens to visit Singapore as a touristic spot. Yeah. So, and I also believe that chess is a little bit more, not a little bit actually, very, very popular in India. Chess is also sort of popular in China, but they are not that, I would say, crazed about the sports, right? Because there are so many other sports that are so popular in China. So that's, I think there's a key difference between popularity. So I think from the tourism angle, it makes good sense. I think the branding of our country right now, we would like to be seen as a premier events capital sort of in the region. So we have been organizing quite well-organized sporting and cultural events. So I don't know if you noticed, we recently organized the Taylor Swift concerts. The Eras Tour, 6 shows, exclusive in Southeast Asia. Of course, that has got nothing to do with chess, but it's more like, you know, the reputation that we are trying to build as a place where people can meet for cultural reasons or for sporting reasons. So we, of course, we have F1, the only night race in the world, in F1. And next year, we will have the World Aquatics World Championships in Singapore. So these are events that we like to bring to Singapore to showcase our ability as an event capital of the region. So putting all these things...
Wait. Like, when you explain me this, it makes total sense that it's, okay, you talk with Federation is, yeah, let's do, let's talk to the country and explain this angle, yeah? It starts making sense. But one problem for me is this, like, and I myself having issues, like, because there are limits, right, like, beliefs, and we have limiting beliefs, often we don't see there might be such a big opportunity. So instead of you, there would be many people, like including me, who would not even think that it's possible to do that. How does it work? How do you manage to think that big? Like, why not? Like, how this thought come to you? Like, for example, it will never come to me a thought, let's make the formula, let's become a Formula Mac driver, because there is limits in my brain. Yeah. So similarly, it would be limiting me. For me, it's like, let's bring it. Why not? Yeah. How do you think this big? And you were like this, like all the time. You were like, I am 35 and what? Let's become a grandmaster. You know what? I'm going to become the CEO of Singapore Chess Federation and change everything. And now we are seeing how you are changing. How you are always doing this?
I, So first of all, I don't want to pretend that this is my idea only. It's really not like that. I had my doubts. I expressed the doubts to people who I think have good advice, and they are bigger experts than myself. So people who are, for example, say people within the sports industry in Singapore, and they could tell me that whether this event could take off, could the financial sort of like the financial challenges would be justifiable to organize such an event. So these are things that questions that I need to get answers to, because of course, you know, I have doubts. We before we start anything that is so big, you always have some doubts, and you also don't want to go around wasting other people's time. Like you don't want to spend time pitching an idea, and then they tell you there's a problem. How do you solve it? And you don't have answers. So I think these are the things that you first have to convince yourself completely before you even pursue it totally. So you need advice, and you need to draw this advice from people around you who are bigger experts than yourself. I think this is the one thing that I always try to do, and I don't try to get ahead of myself. I'm always my biggest skeptic and my biggest critic, and all my ideas, I try to find problems in my ideas and see what others think. I think that's really important, and I'm just lucky, you
What you
know.
just said, what you just said, that you believe in yourself, but you seek for advice. I just recall that you didn't come and say, "Avo, I want to become a grandmaster and let's do that." You came and say, "Avo, I want to be a grandmaster. What do you think? Can I do that?" When you just said that, I recalled our conversation. So yeah, like that's very interesting. I didn't see this parallel. Tell me, bro, when you beat, like what was the first reaction of FIDE? Were they surprised like me, or how it happened?
So
Did
I
they
think
call you and
when
say like there is a bug in your system? We got the wrong email. Like were they like, I bet there should be surprised, yeah? Like oh, suddenly from Singapore a bit.
So I've known Emil Satovsky, the CEO of FIDE, for quite a long time, even before he became the CEO. And we always talk about different random things, you know, like French defense, you know, like whether you should play G5 in any variations of the French. And he would say, no, don't do this, it's rubbish. And we would discuss he's just, you know, very passionate about chess and has strong opinions about everything, and he recognizes that maybe not all his opinions are correct. But for example, he told me, like, he doesn't think knight takes d7 in the Fischer-Petrosian, like, you know, this famous game, yeah, giving up good knight for a bad bishop. Like, he thinks it's not really good. Like, it's not the it's overrated. Like, that's his opinion. So I've known him for a while, and of course, when I know that there was this opportunity, I just sent him a text and say, Emil, this is not a joke. It's not a.
You mentioned it, yeah? You thought that he might think that it's a joke.
And he just knew that I was serious. Like, he knew that I wasn't kidding and I'm not wasting his time, because I told him straight off, I'm not going to waste your time. I will not talk. I'm calling you not to sell you an idea. It means that I am really keen and I want to understand, you know, what are the expectations from FIDE. So I think the conversations have always been quite transparent. There were expectations from FIDE. I know the thing about the topic about this total budget has been going around the internet, and people don't really understand how that budget should look like. And I think you have to dig into the like deeper context to really understand why he says that you might need this sort of budget.
What's
So
the
he
budget, remind
explained.
me? It's 2 to 2.5 million?
So 8.5 million USD, that's like the number that's on the internet. I can't say what the
Okay.
number is on the in my bidding form, but
You can
he
write in the chat
basically
now. Nobody will see. Just write in the chat so
I'll text you
Yeah.
later. I'll text you
Yeah.
later.
Yeah,
So
joking. Okay.
he tried to explain why the budget is as such, and he described some of the things that he would like to see. So the match is not just a match. The match has a lot of other components. You know, we should think about how to publicize chess in general, side events, broadcasting. How do we make it marketable? How do we make it modern? I think we go into like deep discussions about things like that. So I appreciate this sort of like openness. that also gives me a better understanding of what's my expectation. Yeah. So the whole conversation was like, we were literally like calling each other every one or 2 days just to like get clarifications, this and that. Yeah, and that's how, yeah. So they were not surprised that we submitted a bid by the end of May.
Okay, there are many questions I will later ask, because I think many things might be private information, so maybe you cannot reveal it now, so you can do it later. One question I have this. Thinking big, it's great, but there also should be some limit, right? Because if you think big, like, next year I want to play in the World Championship match and play against the winner, so it's also think big, yeah, but then you can destroy yourself, right? Have you ever encountered yourself in problems for thinking that big, or it was always helpful for you and you know and you knew your like the level until what big to think?
I think that I always have high expectations of everything I do. When I took on the role to lead the SCF, I'm not just going to sit around and do the usual stuff that we do. So we have set up all this training, and I like the word that you used in another interview with Saga, that you need infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the word I used very constantly when I was pitching to potential donors, that I want to build a world-class training infrastructure in Singapore. So that was inspired by you.
So I can tell now that I am a little bit involved in organizing the World Championship.
I mean, I never told you this, yeah? So, but it's true. So I'm working on it. I don't have nearly enough trainers. So, I mean, coming back to your question, I think that sometimes you have very high hopes. You want to achieve something. You want to achieve good results with your trainees. Not just good results. I want the trainees at the SCF to be responsible. I want them to have like good values. So we look at things like being accountable, being polite. We wrote down some rules that the kids, they should be by, you know, very, very basic stuff. You should push back your chairs and tables after every training session. You should address the coach by calling them coach. Say hi, you know, things like mannerisms. When we try to, you know, teach these healthy habits from very, very young age, like so from under 8, under 10, under 12, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, when you set expectations that are so high, sometimes you get disappointments because you have this like enthusiasm, right? And this passion and this motivation. And you try to get people to buy into it, and you try to get funding for it. You try to get people to sponsor it, some of your ideas. They just don't seem to have the same enthusiasm. I completely get that. And I mean, because nobody has... you shouldn't expect people to have the same passion that you have. Mm-hmm. All the time. That's the kind of disappointment that I have to manage for myself. And at the same time, even in regard to the trainees, to chess parents, because in my opinion, chess is a way of life. But in the eyes of many parents and their children, chess is just a hobby. It's just a game. Eventually, they will quit the game when they get older because they will find a job, they get married, and so on. And I get that. I completely get that.
Because you did it. You became a grandmaster, then you quit, then you became in federation, then you married. That's why you got it.
Yeah. So I completely get why people might not share that same kind of passion.
So they see you still... as a very bad example. That way, of course.
I know. So... I mean, I do get that kind of disappointment sometimes. Mm. So when I see a parent writing, oh, my kid cannot come to class this year because there's an important exam, I just feel like, how do we try to change this mindset over time? I feel that disappointment because I feel like the kid really wants to come. And I don't really think that stopping chess is going to help his studies much, much more. I don't really think so. But he's their kid. He's not my kid. I have no say in this matter. You know, I can only encourage like good habits. But at the same time, you know, parents have their own limits. They have their own constraints and all these things. And I just have to be try to be understanding about it. And and don't feel so hard done by. I think that's. I have a trainer here, and he's a very experienced. Trainer, Grandmaster Thomas Luther. I could see like sometimes he's so passionate about like trying to help the kids become good players and good people. And I can see that he's so passionate that sometimes he himself feels very disappointed, let down, even when we see some of these cases coming by, you know, like,
Kevin, but
I'm sorry.
don't you think it's natural and there is a filter and that filter exists in everywhere? Even if you are just starting a company, most of them fail. So if you just go to a startup incubator where you are going to learn and you are like 20 companies you are coming and we are going to change the world, after a few months, like most of them are collapsed. After a year, the other is collapsed. So at the end, like less than 1% survives. And just the same way, I think it works in sport. If someone wants to become a president of their country and whatever, like during the time they filters, right? So it's not natural.
I think it's natural. So,
so why,
I
why do we why, we why do we resist that? Why do we don't just take it as it's okay?
Yeah, I know, but it is something that I cannot help. I cannot help it because it is something that I. I know for. I know for a fact that, of course, you cannot expect all the outcomes that you want to surface and to happen. But it's just that, I don't know, it's just maybe it's just passion, you know, like you just feel like, it's hard to accept some of these things sometimes. I'm coping with it. I'm learning as we go by day. I'm getting better at it and trying not to win every single battle.
I will share with you one story. So it happened when I was practicing Wing Chun, the Kung Fu that I was doing.
Oh, you are? Wow.
Sorry? You didn't know?
Nice. I don't think I know.
Really?
You mentioned? No, I don't.
Yeah, I have it in articles. I have many stories around that. So I've practiced like 6 years, and at some point I was working like every day with a coach, three training a day, like that serious I was.
Whoa.
So coming back to... At our group lesson, so what was happening, there were like six levels. And when you are on the sixth level, you are like master in there.
Right.
The first level you get in like 2 months if you train seriously. The second level you get also in 2 months. But this, like, so in 4 months you make the first two levels. But then for the third level, you train about more than 2 years. And then in our group, at our Kung Fu group, I would see that lots of people would stop there. Because you go and you don't learn every day a new thing. Like you might do for a week same thing again, over and over again. The same move, the same movement over and over again for weeks, and you just get bored, yeah? And then many people would quit. So I asked our coach. I said, hey, coach, like, why you made this way? Because first two levels are easy, and then the third level suddenly becomes very strong. It makes disappointing people, and they are quitting. You are losing students. And the coach explained me. He said, the way we did the first two levels easy, we want to introduce this beautiful martial arts to people so they are familiar with that, yeah? But the third level is the filter. Here we filter who really wants to practice and learn this,
yeah.
And who are like they just wanted quick results. They are not really serious. So this is a natural filter, and with this we are filtering the people. And whoever continues, they are serious. So we put more effort on these people who are serious,
yeah.
And we don't spread all our energy because it's not it's not unlimited, yeah. So that story, like, it helped a lot with me with this natural filters. And I was like you. I would go to work at, like, you know, like, how my passion was at Chess Mode, yeah, like, every day working, morning, yeah? So
yeah.
It's difficult for me sometimes when my people would underperform or do something, yeah? So I understand, absolutely understand that. I was also the director of one of the biggest chess schools in Armenia. So I have seen that. Like you would say, like there is a tournament, big Armenian championship, and the parent of the kid would come and say, you know, tomorrow we are flying to Maldives for vacation. We cannot do that. You are like, this is Armenian championship. You don't understand, yeah? So, but that story with my coach helped me with filters. But yeah, at the same time, I understand it's easy to say. It's easy to say than done, especially when there is that amount of passion and excitement. Yeah, tell me, like, you were the CFO of a big startup, a big company. Like, What happened to you? Like, there was a pain, something that you said, like, I'm going to come to Singaporean Chess Federation and change the future. Like, what happened? Like, in my case, you know, yeah, I was in Thailand. Yeah. There was a pain I saw in chess educational industry, and it was pain. So I left everything, all my fun, and came back to start Chess Mode. Like, what was your, in your case? Was it a pain? Why did you left, like, your comfortable life, job, and came to change the future of chess in Singapore?
Yeah, I remember I told you about this, right? Like, I texted you, and you were so surprised.
I don't remember.
Yeah, you can check on our WhatsApp. I was like, you were like, wait, you quit your job? Like, for real?
Ah, yeah. That one I remember. I thought you are speaking about the reason why you quit, yeah? But yeah. I was surprised. I was so, like,
yeah. No, I think that, you know, I was with Lucens for 5 years and very grateful to have the chance to be there, of course.
Lucens is the name of the company, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I was very grateful that my boss gave me the chance to work with him and to grow the company to the size that it was when I left. And then there comes a point when I feel like, first of all, there seems to be a limit to how much I can continue to help the company. Yeah, there's some technical stuff there, but basically I think the company has to focus its energies in the US market. And I just feel like being, you know, mainly based in Singapore, not really so familiar with how it's like working culture in the US and how do you manage our colleagues who are there. I think that becomes complicated for me. And that at some point I feel like my contribution is no longer as substantial as compared to the past. But that's not my only reason for leaving, of course, because still, you know, I still got to make a living. I still got to eat, you know, right? But at the same time, the Federation was going through a transition because we just got appointed, or rather we got elected as the committee running the Federation. So I was the vice president. It was a volunteer position. And I was literally running like two jobs at the same time every day. I was trying to organize a tournament and at the same time doing my work. And it's just at some point, I just feel like it's not possible and I'm letting boss drop and it's not good. Like, it's not good for anything. I'm getting paid to do a job with Lucens. I shouldn't spend so much time on chess. But at the same time, I see it as like an important responsibility. So either I drop one and I keep the other. It's just a question of which one I choose. Then, you know, the age factor comes into play. And I was like, I was about like 40. I was turning 40. And I'm like, do I really want to do like serious chess administration when I'm 50 or, you know, 55? I'm not sure. Things can change. Right now, do I think I still have the energy to do it? Probably. And then you just gauge, okay, there's some financial deficit, of course, because it's not the same pay. But it's not the main thing. I think the main thing is, I think that this is the right time. I have a board that supports me. Even in terms of like people around me, for example, Thomas Luther, he agreed to help with the Federation. If he didn't join the Federation, I would not do this, because I needed him, because he's like so experienced. I need him to do all the teaching and training work that he's doing a great job here. At the same time, also in the, you know, like to build a team, you still need other people. Like you need other functions. You need good people in finance, in ops. Yeah. So I have some certainty that I have people coming to help me in that space. And then I'm like, okay, fine. I'll quit and then I'll join. So I think it's a combination of a few things. It's not like today I wake up and I feel like I'm tired of my job. Let's do this. I don't want to join the SCF and I'm the only one doing everything. I will just collapse. So I also took a risk. Yeah. I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. And you play chess still? Or like partially? Like, whenever like there is some big tournament, or you are officially retired, how it's happening?
So, okay, this is for you. Okay, this is just for you.
I can You mean for me? You want me to edit later?
No. So
Okay.
I'll share this just for you. So after I will play in the Chess Olympiad, and then after that I'm done. So it will be my last tournament.
Like you will not even play some rapid tournaments?
Oh, rapid is fine, you know.
Okay,
Rapid
rapid
is
is
always.
fine. Yeah. Rapid is fine.
We are talking about, you know, like
Serious,
serious stuff, and I
serious.
have to call you and ask you, you know, what do I do against
Yeah.
D4? Yeah, so I think serious chess tournaments where you represent the country,
This is the last one, yeah, in the
this will
Olympiad.
be the last, and I'm
Yeah.
done. And I will focus on growing the federation. I will play some small tournaments here and there just for fun,
So
for my.
should I free sometimes that you are going to call me and say, Ava, what are we doing in French? Help me to prepare for the Olympiad, yeah, again.
Yeah, please. Thank you. Thank you for catching the hint.
By the way,
Then.
I see that you have very limited time and rest, and if in the past you were watching the transport courses, I see that now you are not watching it.
Yes, you're right.
You know how I
You're right.
know? Because when you were telling about Sutovsky that you are talking about French, you said French defense. And if you watched our courses, you would
It's
know
French
that we are
attack.
playing French, it's French attack. And we
Yes,
sue for
I know.
that, right? We sue if some of our student is saying.
But I spoke with him before, so
Okay.
and we use those words then, you see. But I think it's always nice to play chess. I always love playing chess. I will always love playing chess. I think that's something you cannot take away from me. But I don't want to play and play bad and feel so bad about it. It's not really about rating, and it's not about. Okay, part of it is the ego thing, you know, like you still feel like you just somehow you just feel like you can still play good chess, but when you don't train, you're not really that focused and motivated. You cannot play like how you think you can play. So I remember after I became GM, I started doing all sorts of like stuff, right? We did the charity stuff for COVID, and we raised money, and I didn't train. And it was a total disaster in the next 2 years for the national championships. Just losing like 50 rating points in 2 years. I think you knew about this, and it was so bad. And then you have that, yeah, of course you have all these haters like laughing at me and all this. Yeah, you make GM, and then and then I'm like, whatever. Then okay, I decided to try to do it one more time seriously in the following year, and already it's getting tougher and tougher because Tin suddenly from like became a superstar. And then we have some of the young kids getting better. But I decided to be a bit more focused. I even played tournaments before the nationals to warm up. And yeah, I won. Like you knew, yeah. Like 2 years ago, I won. So, I mean, it's just a good way to. It would have been a good way to finish like the competitive side of me at the time, because I just feel like I put some focus into it. I put effort. I trained, and like of course, Tin wasn't at his best shape, but that's not my fault. I took advantage of it. I have to be there to be ready to take my chances. Then and I could still prove that I could win the tournament, and I was very proud. This like proudest moment of my life as a chess player when I became national champion for the 8th time 2 years ago. Yeah, I
Eighth
remember I
time, right?
was
Eighth
yeah
time.
8th time. Yeah, I was trying very hard to hold back my tears, like really, because to me at the time it was just. I shut so many people up, and I also got rid of all this self-doubt, and I'm just very happy that yeah, I won
Yeah,
the
I remember
tournament. And
we were in touch then, and I remember
yeah,
that you sent me that you beat Jean Pierre. How is the first your first player name?
Tin. So I managed to beat him. Of course, he's a very good player, but he didn't play so well that game. But I was in good shape, and then I also played a very nice game with our next. Okay, now his youngest grandmaster in Singapore. His name is Siddharth. I played a very nice game against him, maybe one of my best games of all time. Then I'm just like, everything was just flowing smooth, you know? It was just so smooth, everything. With white, with black, doesn't matter what color, doesn't matter what opening, doesn't matter whether I knew the theory or not, doesn't matter.
So
Even when I was in.
why it was going too smooth? Was it like
I
you were
just.
in flow? That was it a mood?
Yeah.
Like why it was going so smooth?
It was strange. Like, I lost round three. So. Already like didn't start well, yeah. Felt like an idiot after I blundered the piece. And then, you know, the following few games just went super super well. I just do not know. like the conf I think I have I have to thank Tin because after I beat him, I just feel like, okay, I'm going to win this tournament and nothing is going to stop me. Nothing is like this, I'm going to win this.
It's such an interesting feeling, right? That when it comes that you are going to win, it's like that belief, that some inner power you feel, and then somehow your opponent so often feels and they start play badly. You come with the energy and suddenly all it clicks.
Yeah, it's strange, right? I don't know how to explain this. Like sometimes when things click, you just click, and people could feel that power, and they get intimidated by you, right? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what came over me that tournament. Just everything just went so well. And I think I earned every right to be proud of it. I am not going to be, modest about this thing. I never spoke about this in public, actually. I never wrote anything about the games. I never spoke anything about it. But this is definitely like biggest achievement I felt, like to win the national championships at my age at the time.
It's interesting that it's not becoming a grandmaster at your age, but it's winning the national championship, which is the proudest.
It's because it came after 2 years of horrific results. Yeah, that's the thing, like so
So
much
you
doubt.
felt good of the comeback, right? Not just that you won, but you.
Exactly, like the after so like disappointing performances and yeah, all the heart pains, like you lose to some random guy because he played so bad, and yeah, I mean I'm proud to to have won the tournament. I'm not going to shy away from saying it, and no need to be modest about it, I think.
I think even that part when you are like, you know what, I'm going to win this tournament, even there is this belief, and there is also this think big plus belief, and together they often work together. Given like I'm sure that you are seeing lots of kids, especially kids, well, amateurs, adult chess improvers too, who have lots of excuses. I don't have this, I don't have time, I don't have coach, I don't have that, blah 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 blah. And there are lots of excuses, that's it's natural we are having. Often it's our ego that we don't really want, but we find it's easy to find excuses that they're all right. So what advice do you have for the kids, like when you are interacting with them, when you see they have excuses, like anything, you have anything that you're like golden sentence, golden story, like something like how, what do you tell them when you see this and like you are that think bigger and you see here the opposite excuses? Like, how do you bring them upward?
I mean, I don't profess to be like the ultimate motivator in the country. That's not like that. I think I just give the advice that I think is suitable for somebody of that age. So if you're
What's the
under
advice?
eight, so for example, if you're under 8 years old, I think telling too many stories, they're not going to listen to you. They'll just switch off after like 10 seconds. I just go super harsh. I just say, stop whining, stop moaning, stop complaining. Get it done. And normally they listen, Like I just think that kids of that age, they are more receptive to accepting like instructions from somebody they kind of respect and they look up to. So of course they know that I'm the leader of the federation, and then when I say stop complaining, go and do this, stop watching this YouTube, go back and go back and do stuff, read a book and solve the position for 45 minutes, 30 minutes, and so on. They do it. So that's normally the easiest way to get.
What if it's your friend with whom you are training and he wants to become a grandmaster, he's now international master, and you feel like he's adult. Like, do you still be are you still harsh or you use something else?
No, I think if they are like my age or if they are like 20, 20s, they are already adults. So in my opinion, I just share what I feel is constructive, right? I would just say, like how to say, okay, I have this dude that's training at the Federation. He's a very talented player, but he doesn't seem so motivated. And he's very open about it. He just says, okay, I will become whatever I will be IM. I will try to be IM, but nah, GM, no, not really. And he's just not really very serious in training these days. And I basically go to him and say, look, this is your life, man. This is your choice. Like, you have great talent, but talent alone is not enough. And if you are happy with these results, when you're 30, when you're 40, go with it, man. Like, just be happy. You know, that's, I think eventually they have the right to choose what they really want. Like, if, like, and if a guy that says that he wants to be a GM, but he's not really training, I guess he doesn't really want to be a GM. How about the, how hard did we work? Yeah, like, we spend 7 hours on Saturdays. Like, you remember?
Yeah.
So,
my wife would come and say, like, are we going? Like, no, no chance. Even you still have.
I know.
Yes, you ruined lots of dates.
I know. Sorry.
Yeah.
So,
okay, Kevin, and what?
Yeah.
What, like, this is the question I ask to all our guests. Yeah. What's the advice or wish do you have for people who really want to become a grandmaster and they want to improve?
Yeah, these are two separate questions. Yeah, like to become GM and to improve is it's two very different things.
Let's focus on improvement. Who play chess, but they want to improve. Like, what thing you can advise?
So I would say, even for improvement, what sort of goals are you setting for yourself? Because there are many adults who just want to improve and just want to enjoy the game, but they don't set the target. They don't say, I want to be candidate master or things like that. They just say they want to improve the game, and that's fine. You know, you can solve positions faster. You can find tactics faster. I think all these things are good. And I think the important thing is to clearly understand what your goal is. If the goal is just to better understand what commentators are saying when you watch live commentary, that's fine, you know? And for adults who are in this category, just do the things that you enjoy doing the most. Like, I know that there's a lot of, I don't know how you feel about this, maybe you can disagree, but like, for example, I know that there's a lot of advice going around about study end games, you know, like you must study all this stuff, Philidor, whatever, Rook and Bishop against Rook, yeah, these are basic end games, you must study this, you know, this is important, but nobody enjoys it. Like, adults don't enjoy these things. And if you do that, you just lose the interest in the game and you just don't want to train anymore.
I'm 100% with you. I'm 100% with you. And that I'm even saying to my coach when I'm going to gym, often he would give me some particular exercise and I would say, like, yeah, I know that's very good for my leg, yeah, but I hate it. When I hate it, you know, not only I don't enjoy my 5 minutes, but the next tomorrow I don't want to come to the gym, yeah. So I'm not going to be a world champion anyway, yeah. So maybe you have some fun and train at the same time and you have some balance. So I'm 100% with you.
Precisely, I think that's exactly what I'm always telling. So a lot of the older folks that I know. Like, normally they come and they say, oh, what should I study? Like, should I read this book, that book, or whatever? And my advice normally for working adults, just do the stuff that you are good at and you enjoy. Because that's more than what you are able to do anyways, right? Because you only have, like, 1 hour a day, and you might not want to spend that 1 hour a day on chess. So, soft calculation, if that's something you enjoy, soft tactics, and don't worry about like what to play against English opening or one knight f3 and memorize all this theory.
What you are good, yeah, but what about like improving the parts that you are bad?
Yeah, so that's something that again, maybe you don't have to. Like, I don't know. Like the point is, if you want to improve, you must find motivation to improve, right? You must find the motivation to work at the game. And if for example you are bad at end games, you have to invest time in that area, and maybe you just don't like it. If you don't like it, you don't feel happy about it, and I don't know how that will work for like in the long term. You know what kind of outcome you can expect.
Better, but you will hate chess and you will quit. Yeah, in a half year.
That's what I'm trying, and maybe you lose games because and then you just feel, oh, I'm doing all this stuff and I'm losing. What's the point? What's the meaning of life, right? So I think that's really the advice that I would say give for adults. But there are some who are like super serious and they want to be GMs. And I say, okay, if you really want to be a GM, that's a completely different story. First of all, you need to plan a very holistic training regime. So we spoke about this before, I think, like things like diet, things like sleep, physical fitness, planning for tournaments. Are you ready to play tournaments? Newsflash, if you don't play tournaments, you can never become a GM. That's like the minimum thing. Like, I know this joke about. Yeah, sorry, yeah, like just stupid
Go
joke
ahead.
that this guy, like, oh, every day he's praying to God that he wants to strike lottery because he's poor and his family has no money. So he prays to God every single day. And then finally he prays for the 50th time, and then like God just yell at him from above and says, "Dude, can you buy the lottery ticket? You didn't buy the ticket."
That's nice.
I mean, legit, I'll tell you that so many people came to me and say, "I want to be CM, FM, can I get 2200, 2300?" I says, "Yes. Which tournaments are you playing? Like, can you even tell me which tournaments you can play? Like, can you take leave?" Haven't thought about it. Then why are we talking about like getting this rating? You have to play. So these are the things that if you don't even know the full extent of the commitment, don't bother. You are just wasting your time and energy, and then you disappoint yourself, right? So that's, and I think a lot of people don't really know this. That's why I get all these questions. I think this
And
is really what I can say.
that's what people, I think, like often avoid the competition. They are like training, and they don't want to play, and they don't even realize that it's their ego thing, because once you go to the competition, it's the test for the ego. Like, it was like, did I train this 5 months and now I'm going to play? What if I play badly and then it still means that 5 months I trained
I
very
know.
badly and I did stupid things instead of doing the real stuff? I was doing YouTube, and then people avoid the competition. And then we have so many people, at Trust Mode, who are like, we have trained this, and I have not raised my rating. And like, huh? Okay. Like, if you have done that all, like, show me your games. And they are sending me, like, they played 10 games, 10 FIDE, like 10 rated games only a year. And I'm like, but it's a good joke. I will use. I will say, man, buy a lottery, as you said. That's I think it's a great joke.
I really think this thing about playing. Okay, I can. I, on one hand, I can understand the fear, because you don't want to disappoint yourself, right? And especially for adults, it's harder to accept, because you somehow, as adults, you just feel like, you put in the effort, you should have the reward. And I think one thing that you don't really realize is that you can't just play only one event. You cannot expect to play one event and you just hope that you're going to make it. That's not going to happen. In that
Yeah,
first tournament,
lots fell awful, and then eventually you did.
you have to play two, three, four, five, maybe. What, a year. So if you don't do that, how can you improve? That's because that's part of the training. And by the way, I should ask you, like, this thing about 10,000 hours and all that nonsense about. Do you think playing a tournament is considered part of training? Like, do you consider that as part of the 10,000 hours?
We had deep discussion with this with James Altucher, who had written this. He got so annoyed with the concept that he wrote a book about how to skip that 10,000 hour, and he called it "Skip the Line." Like, that it's not just a 10,000 hour, and many people are understanding, like, hearing this concept of Malcolm, and they are like, I'm going to do that, just 10,000 hour. And then they don't understand, it's not just like you sit and watch on YouTube, you just scroll on Facebook, and you are in the chess group, you are scrolling and seeing news. It's not really 10,000 hour. Just playing Blitz is not 10,000 hour. Just doing it, you should really do the most effective things. And I have a few articles about that. It's not really that way. It's not, you should, like, one of my words that I say, like, you should not use is useful. So if you take a book and you say, it will be useful if I read this, it's wrong. If you say it's a good course, it will be useful, it's wrong. So I say, like, if you want to really skip that 10,000 hour, my advice is, like, forget about the word useful. Change it with most effective. If it is the most effective book for you now, okay, do that. If it's the most effective course, do it. If it's the best possible, do it, yeah? But just useful. You have so many limited hours in your day, yeah? Especially if you are adult, you have your work, you have your family, yeah? and you have limited lifespan. Yeah, we don't live 1,000 years. You have limited time, so you need to really go with the most effective things and not just do whatever is useful. Then you lose lots of time, and yeah, then the 10,000 hours, it doesn't work. What I think it's not vivid in the experiment of the 10,000 hours, it was that the violinist and everyone who trained at 10,000 hours, they were like really doing the most effective way. It's not just 10,000 hours, but okay, that's another.
No, you know, they'll completely agree, and I have people in our training squads who tell me that, yeah, I train chess every day, but I don't know why I'm not improving, and then I ask, okay, what is your training? Yeah, I watch YouTube, and I play. I watch some live commentary, and then I play some blitz, and then I look at the analysis of the blitz from chess.com. I'm like, really? That's your training? No wonder you're so bad. Like, so I just,
yeah. By the way,
I completely get.
Just for the listener, yeah, like me and Kevin, yeah. I'm sure Kevin too, right? We don't mean that every YouTube video is bad. They are like really good like channels, yeah. But it's like you should be really like be objective with you, and if you are just watching that video because it's fun at the same time, just be realistic about it and say it's not just like training, it's also fun and I enjoy it. That's fine. That's also okay, especially if you don't have ambitious goals, right? You want just improve and have fun. That's like great. You are watching some YouTuber making fun, teaching, that you are having a great time. But if you are serious and I want to get 2000 rating, that title, etc. Yeah, that, as you said, yeah, like just improving and having fun and seriously going to the goal, it is different, quite different things.
Absolutely.
Kevin, man, thank you so much for coming. I'm sure that you are now busier as before. Now on your shoulders are preparing, organizing this level of event, World Championship match. At the same time, you are going to play in Olympiad representing Singapore, and you are doing so many things. Bro, I'm wishing you so much energy to make this happen, and I'm hoping to have another interview with you once the event is done and you're like, ah, I'm there, yeah. And also I'm looking forward to finally in real life see you in Olympiad. I'm coming there as a guest and hopefully take in real life, hug you. And I've heard that you are very tall. I want to sit in
with my ass. thank you. Yeah, thank you for inviting me, and I'm very pleased to do this. Also, I get the chance to be a bit more reflective in some of the things I've been thinking about. And so, yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some of my thoughts in like a more unfiltered way.
It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot, bro.
Thank you. Thank you, bro.
All the best, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you.
My friends and my champions, once I understand how to find the golden medium between thinking big and unrealistically big, it will be my duty to share it with you. Meanwhile, I think asking someone for advice can be a good starting point, as it was in Kevin's case, when he asked me if it was realistic to become a grandmaster with the amount of time and resources he could devote, and when he asked his federation and his friends if it was realistic to hold the upcoming World Championship match in Singapore. Wishing you all the best, my friend, and I will see you in the next episode. Take care.